Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
And we're thrilled to have in our studios from Harvard Business School, Clayton Christensen, a classic, The Innovator's Dilemma. Good morning, sir.
Thanks. I'm honored to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I got about 18 things to talk about. We could go for like 3 hours. When did you realize the impact that The Innovator's Dilemma would have?
Boy, it's just beginning to become clear to me. I really wrote it to study. I had started a company before I became a doctoral student again at age 40.
Well, that's where I wanted to go. And tell us this story, folks. For all of you that want to blow up your career and start over like John Tucker. That was a joke, John. Excuse me.
Yeah.
You're going nowhere.
Not really.
But anyways, you did it. We talk about it. Tell us what you did to get to your doctoral degree and then on to Innovator's Dilemma.
I always had wanted to be a teacher, but we didn't have any money to fund the doctoral program. And so when I got an MBA, I went to work first for a consulting firm, and then I started a company with several MIT professors. To make products out of advanced materials. It has become quite successful, but I was hitting age 40 at this point, and with the support of a wonderful wife, realized if I was ever going to be a teacher, I better get started. And so we put the number two person in the company in charge of the company. I bailed out and became a doctoral student again. Mm-hmm. I had 5 kids at the time.
And your distinction, my deepest sympathies on that. Michael McKee sends his sympathies as well. But before Michael jumps in here, the distinction here, which goes back to me to Thomas Kuhn in 1949, is this idea of we do things by habit and we get our companies better, our businesses better, but then there's this disruptive force out there. That's the core of the book, right?
That's right. And I'm in a lot of ways, I'm glad that I built a company because when I saw competitors fail, you could not attribute it to ineptitude. These are very smart people who seem to be making all of the right decisions, and yet they still stumbled and often failed. And why is it that success is hard to achieve and success is hard to sustain? I just didn't feel like we had an answer to what was a fundamental question. So as a doctoral student, I decided to study how this had happened in the disk drive industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my thesis. And then as I became a professor at HBS, I started to see, oh my gosh, the same fundamental phenomenon of what caused successful well-run companies to fail.
Right.
Just happened over and over and over again. And so that's when I wrote the interview.
Let me quickly bring in my colleague, Michael McKee, and we'll come back.
Mike. Yeah. Well, very quickly, the question is, you talk about innovation coming up from below, companies being threatened. What can the companies up above do to hold it off?
The conclusion was you almost cannot fight it. It's going to happen whether you like it or not. And so you need to maximize the performance of the existing company as long as you can, but use the capital to nurture yourself, somebody coming.
I know there's a lot on economics. And Mike McKee, I'm going to go right to you with your important question to Professor Christensen on Bill Gates' shop.
Well, we're talking about companies that may be disrupted from below, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, Microsoft was the technology company. Now they're struggling to get something into the market that people are going to want to buy. Is this an example of what you're talking about?
I worry that they are. So you're a part of an ecosystem, and the traditional laptop computer and all of the suppliers or the components of that are being disrupted by smartphones. And at the beginning of every industry, the architecture is proprietary. It then becomes open, and so as the smartphone disrupts the laptop computer, Microsoft just isn't there, And they're trying to get in there, but their business model just won't allow
it. What is their business model that is distinctive then from Apple and from Google?
Well, at the beginning, you need to have a proprietary interdependent system. And Apple had it. IBM just couldn't have it. That's not who they are. And then it opens up and becomes modular, just like the Dell became, it disrupted Apple in the computer because at one stage you had to be proprietary, another stage you had to be open. And the same thing is now happening where the Android operating system becomes causes modularity in the smartphone business. But Microsoft just isn't there. They're not providing the OS in these modular open.
There's a rumor, Mike McKee, that I believe Mr. Gates and Mr. Ballmer met in the hall of a dorm at your school, a professor.
Yeah.
And it was pretty good for a number of years. But as Mike McKee says, things changed. Things changed at DEC. Every company, everyone listening to this conversation worldwide knows things change. What does the C-class officer do to be sure they can adapt from their certain path?
The key is not to adapt your core business. And the reason is that this is a process, not an event. And for a very long time, the core business stays strong. And you can't, don't want to prostitute the performance of that to go after this new operation. But you have to start the new operation even when the old is going strong, you know. And that's what they have not done. And I think the reason why, and what does a C executive do about this, is there's a fundamental problem about the world, which is data is only available about the past. And so if you wait until the data is clear that we're getting disrupted, you're always going to be taking action when the game is over. You need to have a theory on your mind that allows you to say, oh, geez, that's happening to us.
Well, I want to talk about the theory. Mike, jump in here.
Well, I was going to say, so innovate. But how far can you stray from your core competency? Microsoft probably wouldn't want to launch airplanes. Well, here's Apple, you know, has become the big thing. Are they doing what you're saying by introducing all these new products, or is it all one and the same? And at some point, the Android system or somebody like that is going to eat their lunch the same as has happened to these other companies.
Right. It's a great question. And the way I would characterize what Apple is doing is introducing a set of remarkable but sustaining innovations that enable this wave of smartphones and better smartphones and then tablets to disrupt the laptop business. And what they're not doing is they're not seeing that Android and the open system is gaining significant market share.
The core of what I do here, and folks, you've heard me say this, so I get hate mail when I say it on air, and this goes back to Thomas Kuhn in 1949, is this idea of a type 1, type 2 construct. You just said that. What business practices are not so much what you do, they're what you do not do. Weigh that now within the success of IBM purchasing many small acquisitions. Full disclosure, folks, I'm an IBM shareholder, and compare and contrast that to Hewlett Packard, which is trying to go for the mega purchase and has gotten themselves into trouble.
Yeah, it's a great illustration of this. So IBM started out making digital mainframes. There were about 9 companies that were in that business. Only one of them, IBM, made the transition to digital mini computers.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it by setting up a separate business unit in Rochester that could create a different business model. All of the other mainframe companies died. And then there were about 8 or so mini computer makers. IBM was the only one that made the transition to the personal computer. And they did that by setting up a different business unit in Florida. All of the other mainframe companies, like Digital Equipment, collapsed. And so and then IBM lost its focus on this and missed the next wave. But IBM evolved not by causing their business units individually to evolve, because they had a business unit that was really good at making what they were really good at. And it's almost like in biological evolution, individual organisms don't evolve. They just are born and then they die. But a population can evolve as the mutants gain market share.
Yeah.
And so corporations can evolve like IBM did by creating new business units, shutting down the old ones. And then, as you said, they continue to do that through small acquisitions, creating a new business unit and a new business model while they got out of the old ones. And so IBM has evolved dramatically.
Is all this happening much faster these days because of technology?
That's right. And there is a lot of capital going on that companies can use to do this if they want to do it.
Do you presume that internal rates of return for private equity and that capital will come down just because there's boatloads of capital?
There is. It's to me the next really important question in our economy, and that is we are awash in capital. And George Gilder said something that had a big impact on me. He said, if something is scarce and expensive, you'll husband its use and deploy it only where it leverages the results. And if something is abundant and cheap, like sand, you don't worry about that.
I got time for one more question. Thomas McCraw is one of my heroes of HBS. He wrote the book on Schumpeter. Is what we're talking about here creative destruction?
It is. And I think what the role that I can play in this enterprise is Schumpeter said what happens, but he didn't offer the causal mechanism. And that's what I've been trying to offer to that, is this is the mechanism by which creative destruction happens.
Please come back. We'd love to have you back. Clay Christensen, folks, the book is The Innovator's Dilemma. It's got my highest recommendation, whether you're in business or not. As we see the turmoil of this financial crisis, it is the must read.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.